If you want to pump your body and expand your mind, there's only one place to go. Mind Pump. Mind Pump. With your hosts, Sal DiStefano, Adam Schaefer, and Justin Andrews.
How was you guys' weekend? Did you guys do anything? I had a crazy weekend.
I saw that you had your boy do the robot games or whatever the fuck.
Lego Robotics, dude.
So cool, man.
Is that outside of the school, or is that, how does that work? I didn't have anything cool like that growing up.
Well, they didn't have fucking, I don't think they had it when we were kids, right? Yeah. I don't think they had this kind of Lego Robotics, but it's an extracurricular activity, but it's definitely science and programming based. And so what they do is they put together, they're given a task, and they have to compete in teams, and the tasks, you know, involve lifting objects, moving objects in particular areas that are designated, maneuvering around objects. And so there's different tasks. They all have points. If you touch your robot while it's doing it, they remove points. So there's all these different ways to get penalties. You can, in between tasks, you can change the attachments on your robots, hit a new program and let it go out. So it's pretty awesome. These kids have to really get in there with the programming and the ingenuity with designing the robots. So it was a lot of fun to watch. So my son did this last year when he was in fifth grade, and they went, and I had no idea what to expect last year, right? So no idea. So we go to this big tournament, and I went to some of his practices, but I didn't know what these things look like.
Damn, they have practices for it and everything?
Well, I mean, you can't just you have to program out, and you have to write your programs and stuff and design your robots. And then you take your robot with its programs to these competitions.
So they actually code everything, or is it part of a program that they just...
They're coding.
Okay, cool.
So let's say, you know, you're one of the tasks is, you know, your robot needs to move this, and it'll be like a theme. So it needs to move this shark into safe waters, but it has to go over this particular obstacle and around this other one and unlock this door or whatever. So you have to figure out how to, number one, build your robot so that it can do those things, and then how to program it, because it has to be autonomous. You have to push a button and it goes. You can't touch it.
Wow.
Yeah. So,
that's fucking cool.
So I had no idea what to expect last year, and they were the youngest team by far, because it goes all the way up to, like, I think senior in high school, and then there's other competitions for older, if I'm not mistaken.
God, I bet it's just like full of little nerds.
Dude, of course. So that's the thing, right? Yeah. So
we go. The leaders of our world.
Yes, that's it.
Right. You're right. I'm looking at CEOs right here.
That's
all
it.
All the fucking CEOs.
So we go,
next 20
and
years.
You have different grades competing in the same competition. So, you know, here's these little fifth graders competing against eighth and ninth graders and stuff.
Oh, wow, really?
And they didn't do well at all in the competition aspect of it, but they had shown such amazing teamwork and enthusiasm. The coaches loved them so much.
So good for him to be doing that with older kids and smart like that.
So last year they won an award, the judges award.
Exciting.
This year they actually qualified for the regionals. But the thing that I noticed is, like, I'm walking around this tournament, and it's like the parents are all like super brains, right? Like, it's like sports, but for... Yeah. You know, nerds, right? Yeah. Which is great, because I'm like, fuck, this is going to be totally cool for his employment, you know, opportunities in the future. And he loves it. He loves doing it. I get so into it, dude. You should hear me, like, yelling and freaking out and getting all excited. It's fucking awesome.
Go, robot, go!
Dude, you should... It's
He's
fucking...
He's got a little fucking number one foam hand, you know?
Oh, dude. It's so awesome, right? So there was this one...
Yeah, we got to get you one of the bumper sticker for your car that says, my kid beats your kid at robotics or whatever like that. Dude.
So here's a... So
you just coded the fuck out of that.
There was this... So here's the thing, this thing that happened. And by the way, you'll encounter this when you have kids, if you ever have kids, where, you know, it's challenging because you don't want to... impose, you know, on your kid what you think they need to be or whatever. You want to kind of let them grow or whatever.
Let's talk about this.
Yeah, I know you have a story, right? So I'm watching them. They did their first round. They did a practice round. Then they did their first round. So they do three rounds within this competition, and the top score is the one that they keep. So the first round, they come out, and they fucking kill it. They only have one penalty, and they were first place among all the teams. So we're super, like, pumped. Like, this is crazy. Like, last year, they did so poorly in that particular event. This year they killed it, so we're super excited. The kids are excited. These tournaments are long, by the way. You get there at 8 a.m., you don't leave till like 6 p.m. So other teams are going up, and then this other team comes up, and it's this team of fucking engineers, okay? Like, all their dads are super engineers. They have their computers out there tweaking everything. My kids' team, like, none of us know shit about this kind of stuff. It's basically the kids doing the work. Not to downplay, you know, or make the other team seem like they had an unfair advantage. That's just the way it is. this other team did better than they did. So our kids come out, see the score, and see now they're in second place. So they have two options now. Option one, they can stick with their original program that they did, but try to do even a little bit better and squeeze out some extra points and go the safe route, or throw in an extra maneuver, which is very risky, which if they execute, will put them in first place, but if they fail, they'll fucking tank, right? So I'm not saying shit. I want to see what these kids come up with. Now, I know that strategy is, look, it doesn't really matter because you already hit your high score in your first round. You're pretty much guaranteed second place anyway. Mm-hmm. Going forward, you should just take a chance. That's in my mind. Like, go for it. You got nothing to lose. Even if you go zero, you still got that first score, right?
Yeah.
But I want to see what the kids had to say. And, you know, it's embarrassing. You don't want to go out, try a new maneuver.
You're not trying to influence it.
You don't want to go out, do a new maneuver, and just fuck up everything because you got all these people watching. So these kids are, like, kind of stressed out about it, right? So they're like, we want to go, no, we'll do what we did last time. We'll just do what we did last time. That other one's, you know, real difficult. And I'm talking to my son about it. And then my son goes over to him and he's like, guys, let's go for the hard one. He goes, let's just go for it. He goes, you know, let's do it. I think we can win if we go for it. And I'm listening to him try and talk them into going for the extra, you know, the extra mile, that extra maneuver, the risky.
Is there a teacher or a coach for them? Or like, how does that?
There is, but she's very hands off at this point. She wants the team to decide, like, what to do.
Oh, okay.
Which I enjoy. I like seeing that. Now, at the end of the day, they ended up not going with it because there were some changes in the obstacles and stuff that they had to go through and whatever. But to see my kid and these kids want to push for that, because then all of them were pushing for it to take that risk. Man, I was so fucking proud to see that.
Yeah, it's cool,
so
yeah.
Fucking proud. But anyway, long story short, they qualified for regional, so we'll be doing regional competition soon.
Oh,
pretty exciting stuff.
Go back again then, huh?
We're going to go back again, and then if they do well in regionals, then they do nationals. And it's a big deal. I think, like, first place in these, you get, like, a lot of money for scholarships, and you get recognized by big corporations and companies, computer companies. Some of these kids that do real well, I mean, I'll tell you what, the last tournament we went to, there were some kids doing just presentations. They weren't in the competition, but they were presenting, like, their robots that they programmed and shit. And there was this all-girls team from one of the high schools. So it was like four girls. They had designed this massive robot to do all these different tasks. They programmed the whole fucking thing themselves. They're all like 15 years old. They're kids.
Wow.
And they're waiting for adults to come up, and then they'll sit down. You know, when you go up and look at it, they'll be like, would you like me to explain how this works? I'm like, sure. And I'm looking at them. I'm like, fuck, I'm looking at.
Like, whoa.
Like future fucking leaders, man.
Right.
It's really fucking awesome. But yeah, you gotta watch your kid. Watching your kid do sports or competition or whatever, it really challenges you to, because you don't want to be that parent, you know what I mean? You don't want to be that parent that makes your kid feel shitty because they're not into what you're into or whatever. Right. You know what I'm saying? Right. I know you said you had something.
Yeah, well, I mean, totally different kind of scenario as far as that's concerned. Like, I had to really pull back as far as, like, a lot of my intention, you know, to get my son into sports and what it was that really drove me when I played sports, and you know, what I got out of it is like completely, I wouldn't say completely different, because he enjoys it, you know, and he likes the camaraderie, and he really likes hanging out with his friends. But there's there's a competitive component there that, whether I like it or not, if I'm on the sidelines, like, I'm like on whatever he's doing, I'm watching him, and I'm like trying my hardest not to just like yell and coach and like give techniques and, you know, advice and you know, and just like sort of inject myself and project myself into him.
So you want him to be like super aggressive, competitive?
I just want him to go for the ball. Yeah. Which, fuck.
Which son,
you know,
is this?
I mean?
Which son is this?
This is my oldest.
Oh, your oldest.
Yeah. So he, and I have him in Taekwondo, and he does really well in that because, there's a lot of like one-on-one direction and like attention as far as that's concerned. And plus, he kind of enjoys it because it's, I don't know, it's a different speed. But like a lot of his friends play soccer, and like I was actually, what was crazy for me, because I had to like help coach one of the games. And I realized, like, once I got like involved, you know, how like crazy I could get, because like that competitiveness about me, I haven't really expressed that much. But like when I was there, I was like watching him just like, you know, I gave him coaching points and I'm telling him what to do and all this stuff. And then he's just like, you know, chilling and like sitting there, and then he just kind of shuffles back and forth and doesn't go for the ball and just kind of watches it go into the goal, and I'm just like, like kick the ball, you know, like I'm just like losing my damn mind, you know, and I just like, I was like, oh my God, I have to like focus on something else. I was like, okay. And I just remember, cause there's like one kid's like, he's the stud. He's the one on the team that just fucking, you get him in there, you know, he's going to score goals and like keep us in the game. And so, you know, I'm like trying to kind of coach him a little bit more and be like, okay, good job, you know, good effort, you know, like you're trying or whatever. And it's just like so hard for me. Cause like, you know, like I was the kid that was on the team that was like, I wanted the ball always. I always wanted to score. I was like that was like everything to me, you know? And yeah. So I've really had to reevaluate, like, you know, my influence and me being there, like how I need to present myself so I don't like discourage him or like make it a horrible experience for him, because I really do want him to enjoy it and like move around and like get like, and he slowly kind of got better, like as far as, you know, going for the ball and like being a little bit more into the game. But like, oh my God, it's like, it's like I start laughing because I was like, oh my God, this is like, I can't even handle this. Like I had to like go like leave and go to the bathroom for a minute, cause I was just stressing out and like
it makes you
punching
grow.
Myself.
It makes you grow as a parent. I'll tell you what, I had a total learning experience from this weekend watching my kid do this robotics tournament. I was talking to, you know, to Jessica about this, and you know, we were talking about how really what you get out of these things that you do as a kid has less to do with what you're doing and more to do with the passion that is behind it. So when a child does something that they're really passionate about, it doesn't matter if it's piano, it doesn't matter if it's, you know, soccer, taekwondo, Lego robotics, whatever, what they get out of it is because of that passion. And that will, not only they'll succeed at what they're doing or do better at it, but it's how much they can apply themselves because they're really into it. Mm. And I know that I make my kids do certain things because I want them to do it. Mm-hmm. And my kids want to please me because, you know, I'm dad, right? They want to make their dad happy, but they're not super into it. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? I see them. They're there because they like their friends or whatever, but they're not super into it.
But you then, still want to challenge them too as a parent. You want to put them
You want to expose them.
Exactly.
You want to expose them. But then when I see them doing something that they're really into, it's an entirely different thing. So,
oh, yeah.
And it's like, I want, you know, as a dad, you just want them to do what you did, right? So I'm like, I want you to be passionate about this particular thing, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And maybe they're not. And you have to check that. You have to put that aside, because what the benefit that they're going to get from what they're doing it doesn't necessarily have to do with what they're doing as much as it has to do with
how they do it.
How they do it and the process and the passion that they have behind it. And really, as a parent, one thing I've learned is, you got to kind of get behind it, even if it's not your thing. Like, you know, like, I consider myself a big nerd too, but I'm not in the programming sense. That's not my thing. Like, I like learning things, like speaking, but to see my kid really get behind that and me get excited about the fact that he's really into it.
Mm-hmm.
I saw so much benefit in that versus like if I would put him in something else that he wasn't super into.
Oh, of course.
All, you know what I'm saying?
I think I'm still trying to find that. I know he's like, he may do well in that arena, and I'm going to explore that next. And you know, I think there's the side of also having the fitness background and all this that, you know, is really crucial for me to, you know, sort of implement movement and make that a priority in his schedule and his life. And so, you know, I'm definitely open to moving around and trying different things that are going to resonate better. He definitely enjoys what he does. It's just that he experiences it in a different way than I did.
Well, so can you tell a difference between the two? Like is one of them?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Big difference.
Really? Yeah,
my youngest is going to be like this maniac. Like he's ready. He's like, he's just this like bull in a china shop. You know, he's ready to destroy everything.
You mean he's you?
Yeah, pretty much.
That's good.
Physically, he's just like me. And
I
like,
think that was
his personality. But like his it's weird because then my oldest looks just like me.
Yeah.
But he's like completely the opposite. You know, he's like more like my wife's, you know, personality as far as the competitive nature and all that. He doesn't really have. But, you know, my youngest, he's a maniac.
One thing, too, you want to be careful for is, because I experienced this as a kid myself, is when you say things like that, like if you're talking to your kids or in front of your kids, you're like, oh, this one's a lot like me,
no,
and this
yeah,
one's
I don't
not
say
like
any
me.
Of that stuff.
The
no.
reason, it, I'll tell you why, because it's innocent. It's totally innocent, right? Yeah. You're not saying anything bad. In fact, I mean, obviously, I know you as a person. You don't love one more than the other or like one more than the other. You're just talking about their personality.
No, it's just differences.
But if the child idolizes you, like let's say your boy idolizes you, but he hears you saying that he's not like you.
Yeah.
Then that can be something that, you know,
right.
is
That's
a challenge.
Right.
For
yeah,
them.
You wouldn't say that.
No, what you want to do is you want to talk about the things that they have in common with you in front of them, because especially if they idolize you, and boys will idolize their fathers. You know, you're their male role model, and you know, they want to be like you even if they're not. You know what I'm saying? Because for me in fitness, my father was very physical, very strong, very athletic. I wasn't. And so that was one of my challenges. And my dad was a fantastic dad. It's just, you know, without knowing, you would hear him say things like, oh, my boy over here, he's a lot like me. My son over here, he's more into books and stuff like that. And I'd be like, fuck, I don't want to be into books. I want to be like my dad.
Yeah.
So, you know, like I said, it's funny, you know, how challenging it can be to be a fucking parent.
Oh, dude.
Even if you love the hell out of your kids, you know.
Oh, of course. And that's why, you know, you want to bury yourself into what they're passionate about for sure.
That's
and
it.
You just become that as well. Instead so it's not of, like it's a exactly. difference. Like I will totally become, you know, a part. And that's also too, like we're actually looking from Taekwondo. Now I'm actually going to try and do jujitsu with him. And so like, I don't know how to do it, but I wanted to see if that maybe is something that we both could like, you know, sort of experience from the ground up. So
exactly.
Anyway,
what the,
ooh, it's the father bird.
Chimera Quaw. Today's Quaw is being brought to you by Chimera Coffee. It's the only coffee that is infused with all natural nootropics for a cleaner, calmer, and more focused buzz without the crash. Click the Chimera link at mindpumpmedia.com and input the discount code MINDPUMP at checkout for 10% off.
It's the motherfucking Quaw.
The eagle has landed.
Quee-quaw.
First question is from Hope Granger. I follow only two fitness groups. One is Mind Pump, who I love to bits and tell everybody about. Best thing ever. What do you do when your other favorite fitness personalities that you have followed for over 5 years sells their souls to big fitness corporate products?
Whoa.
<et cetera?
laughs> Two things come
sell their soul, huh?
Two things come to mind when I read this question, because I don't know who they're talking about besides us, but two things come to mind. Number one,
I know, I'm trying to think who just recently.
Well, number one, there are people who definitely sell their, you know, sell out. Okay. There's definitely those people who start up, you know, grassroots, they have a message, and then they tend to sell out to corporate interest or business or whatever. But I also think that sometimes we, you know, we judge people because they grow. Let me explain. Like, it reminds me of like that garage band.
Oh, totally.
You know,
yeah,
or
I
that
know where you're going with this.
Yeah, where they're like, oh man, I used to listen to that band back when they were small and doing like.
Then they signed with a big label and everybody, then hella people hate
them. Yeah, and now they sold out. And it's like, they're still making good fucking music. They just got big. And now because you're the kind of
there's
person
somebody
that.
Somebody else producing it.
Yeah, you're the kind of person that feels like you only want to be a part of the thing that nobody knows about. You know what I mean? Like, oh, you know, I know this one. I do this one thing that nobody talks about. And that makes it cool. Now that everybody knows about it, you don't want to do it anymore. So sometimes I think it's that, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
But there are people who I think, definitely people sell out. I mean, you know, Mind Pump is very careful with how we present our information. We're very, very careful in constantly checking ourselves and our egos, because I'm not going to lie to you. Like, as you grow, we started off with our message of zero fucks, right? That was our message. We're gonna call it out like it is. We're going to be true to who we are. And then we grew very big, gotten lots of notoriety. People, you know, consider us authorities, and your ego constantly wants to grow. It constantly wants to get big. Your head wants to get big. You want to, you know, change the way you do things now, because now you got to be serious about what you're doing. But we're really good at trying to check ourselves constantly. And I think that's what it takes. You know what I mean? You got to constantly check yourself to stay true to who you are. Because, you know, for two things. Number one, integrity. You know, integrity is something that's pretty rare in fitness, especially with fitness celebrities. In particular, you know, I can speak of one with a with a PhD likes to talk about his PhD all the time, who's got zero integrity. We're talking about Jim Stepani, who constantly says stupid shit and won't even mention the word mind pump. Anyway, I'm not going to go on that. A little irritated with him lately.
I was going to say, bro.
I'm not going to mention
it's
him.
It's not even a waste of your breath.
But Jim Stepani.
Integrity's rare, but, you know, we want to always maintain our integrity. Number two, we built our audience on being real, and I think the second we aren't real, we'll lose that audience. And so I don't want to lose that audience. I want to keep my core audience. I don't care about growing it any bigger.
Oh, that's everything, dude. And I think that, you know, that with this question, it's like the growth. Every business is going to go through a period of growth. It's like, well, how did you grow? You know, and it does matter. You know, and it matters the decisions you make to acquire this growth, and whether it's financially or whether it's just your audience or your influence, you know, what you have to stay true to your core values, and whatever the core values are that you create going into the business, and you want that it to be a reflection of that, even if it's on a larger scale.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think I have a little bit more, you know, patience, I think, for, you know, people that do this, because one, it's really hard to do. I mean, the boys are saying some stuff right now that I think is true, and it's true to Mind Pump, and it's very important to us. But not everybody has that luxury, dude. Not everybody was 35 to 38 years old, have established businesses already, have kind of been successful, and then had the ability to start a podcast or a business, you know, viewing their opinions and putting their stuff out there and being able to do what we've done without tying ourselves to a big company to help fund us. I mean, that's tough to do. And very, very few people are even in a position to do that. I mean, you might have somebody out there who, you know, is a, you know, fitness personality that you absolutely love. They've got great personality. They got great information. They give lots of good content out there, and they end up having to sign with a, and I say having to, because you don't ever have to do anything, but they end up signing with, let's say, a big, you know, nutrition or a big supplement company. Let's use like someone like Cellucor, who we were in conversation with for a while there. And it's like the same thing that we battle with. Now, we have the luxury to have refused them. And a big reason why we did wasn't because, you know, all of their supplements they sell, you know, there's a bunch on there that we just don't agree with. It's not just because of that. It's because we also knew that we would have to change our message, and that we would have to, you know, kind of dance around that. I don't plan to do that at all, but I could totally see working with a company like that, that if they have some products that I use and I stand behind and I think are great and beneficial, but maybe they have things that I'm not, and that when you're merging two businesses or two companies, it's really difficult to find another marriage that is absolutely perfect.
Identical to yours.
Identical to your views. And it's not as simple, and not like marriage is simple, but it's not as simple as just finding one partner. And because in this business, you know, most people have to affiliate with 2, 3, 4, 5 multiple different companies that you're trying to align as many values and views with yours as possible, so you guys can grow together and there's nothing conflicting. But in reality, that's really tough to do. You know, like for another example, like we just recently shot a series. We were hired by the Kettlebell Kings, and we did a video series for them. We're a company that we absolutely love their kettlebells. I think they're the best ones out on the market. That was a cool little relationship, but I don't know the CEO personally. I don't know, you know, what stuff they're into, and like, you know, are you going to, you know, write me off as a, you know, podcaster because you find out that the CEO is, you know, into something really weird or something that's you're totally against or has political views that are different than yours or mine? Like, fuck, man, that's almost impossible to find a company or another person like that all their values align with you. I think how they deliver that message is important too, because I really think that we could have, if we really wanted to, we could have aligned with Cellucor, because they do have some products, they do have some things that we've all utilized and we did like, and I felt like they are planning in this year, they're going in the direction. I know they created another line where they're using all natural stuff and no artificial sweeteners and dyes, and so they're going the direction of the market. Although they have a bunch of stuff that they carry that is, you know, different than what we agree or talk about, I still think we could have worked out a relationship where, yeah, there's things that we talk about and we promote and we would promote on the show, but then there's other things that we just don't, that because that's part, they built their business and mm-hmm. I can't say, you know what I'm saying? Do you know where I'm going with this? Like, I don't think that it's fair to really write somebody off because of that. Now, if they really, and you said sell your soul, so I don't know who you're talking about.
Yeah, yeah.
If sell your souls means you
I
go.
I mean, if they signed up with Shreds. Yeah,
exactly. Or some MLM company, you know what I'm saying? If you're all of a sudden, you know, you were this fitness celebrity and then you start going like, oh, it was because I took this supplement why I'm completely shredded, and you start marketing and pushing like that. Well, that's a different story. You know,
I think it's selling your soul is just if you go against your core value. You know what I mean?
If you do a 180 from what you're talking
there,
about.
Exactly.
There you go.
The problem with fitness is so much of the information out there is bullshit. So much of it is driven by false science or no science, pseudoscience. So much of it is you know, driven to make people feel bad about themselves, and you know, that's why you got to buy our product, and we're going to promote this particular way of eating because we know that it you know, it's going to make you buy more of our supplements. Or you know, again, you know, like the character I used, the example I used earlier, you know, telling people they need to consume, you know, if you're a 150-pound female, you need to eat 300 grams of protein a day. Oh, and you know what'll make it easier? You know, 5 scoops or 6 scoops of my, you know, super jizz protein or whatever the fuck it's called. Like, that's
sounds yummy.
That's
delicious.
That's the kind of shit that's that you know that you got to be careful for. But as companies grow, they doesn't mean that they're necessarily selling out. It just means that they're growing. I think sometimes we fall so in love with the smallness of the indie band or the small, you know, TV show that nobody knows about, or you know, the food, the little restaurant that nobody knows about, and it's in the corner. Next thing you know, there's 15 of them.
Yeah,
and
now when it's mainstream, you get detached all of a sudden.
Yeah, now it's like, oh, you know. And I think sometimes things do lose their charm, you know, with that. But you know, in our case, I'll say that is the priority. The priority of Mind Pump is to remain true to who we are. But I'm going to be honest with you.
We want to grow.
Who we are isn't stagnant either. You know what I mean? My opinions on nutrition have changed in some cases very subtly, in other cases kind of big, since we first started Mind Pump. I used to recommend, speaking personally, I used to tell people to make their own pre-workout supplements and how to add particular amino acids and mix them together. I don't even recommend people do that anymore. I mean, that's a big difference. We used to put it, we even had it on our site.
Which, that being said, I think that flexibility that we give ourselves to grow and evolve.
You have to.
I think you should be able to give that same flexibility to a company. So, you know, part of what really intrigued us, like when we were going through negotiation with CelluCor way back when, and I'm just, by the way, I'm using them as an example. We have no intentions of doing anything with CelluCor whatsoever.
We haven't talked to them in forever.
So I just wanted to use them as an example of, you know, a situation like this. You know, part of what really intrigued us was we had found out that this coming year that they were going to be moving this whole new, they're creating a whole new line, and they were going to be going in the direction of like this all natural, and they were looking to get into stores like, you know, Target and Whole Foods and like, you know, mainstream market and going towards the health direction. And that really intrigued us. And they didn't say that they were going to get rid of their other line, that they're selling pre-workouts and, you know, freaking muscle recovery stuff and
test 5,000.
Yeah, and test stuff. Like, we don't care about that. We were interested in the direction they were going, and we could see ourselves attaching ourselves to that and promoting it and talking about that, and we could have worked out a great relationship. So, you know, whoever you're talking about right now, I mean, I don't know if I would completely write them off because they signed with a fitness product. It's about how they deliver that message. I think you can keep your integrity still and align with people. I do business with a lot of people, and there's a lot of people I do business with I don't totally like, you know. So there's ways to do that where there's certain things that you guys see within each other that you respect, and just because they don't do everything the same way or have all the same exact views as you do doesn't mean that you can't do good business and do good for people.
Bearded, tatted fitness engineer.
Wow.
What are your thoughts on insect-derived protein supplements?
I have yet to try
any. Very interesting.
I'm
intrigued by it.
I had a little bit of a bar. I think it was the Cricket protein bar.
We tried that, didn't we?
I thought it was pretty bomb, actually.
I had no idea it had insects in it. It tasted amazing. It was a little high in sugar, but it tasted good.
Right.
Here's the thing with insects. You know, they talk about this being the future of feeding the world because, you know, they require less water. They can be obviously organic. They're insects. Most of the shit you spray on plants is to kill insects.
There's a gajillion of them.
You don't need to spray insects with anything, right? So it can be done organically. They can be grown on waste products from other things like manure. They use less water. So it's better, you know, for the environment. It's cheaper. They're nutrient dense. You know, the other aspect of it is the animal lovers usually don't have a problem with insects being, you know, raised and killed. Yeah. Obviously, insects are not as cute you know, furry animals.
They're ugly little bastards.
I have no problem with it at all. I have yet to use them on a consistent basis, but if it's good protein, it's better for the environment, it's probably cheaper, it's got good health benefits. Who cares, man? Go for it. You know what I mean? It's processed anyway. It's processed powder anyway. It's not like you're eating the actual, you know, it's not like I'm taking a live cricket and eating it because that'd be difficult. It's powder. You're not going to know the difference.
Yeah, it sounds a lot grosser than what it really is. You can't tell the difference, you know? Yeah.
You don't know.
Yeah,
it's
no.
Not it's like you got beady little eyes you're biting into. Yeah.
I do think that's the drawback of it, though. I think it does take quite a bit of sugar to give it some sort of flavor or taste, right?
Does it?
To distract you from the fact you're eating insects.
I don't know. I think because we tried the bar. Excuse me, the bar. I'm going through puberty right now.
man.
We tried the bar, but I think bars need more shit to make them more palatable. You know
yeah,
I mean?
Right. If it was like a whey shake or something, or not whey, it wouldn't be whey, no. You know, but if it was like a protein shake.
Well, they grind it down, so it's just like a powder. So, I mean, you don't even know.
Yeah.
Really?
What happens if you like take a scoop out and there's like a...
I wouldn't mind trying
like a nice little...
There's insects in my insect powder.
Start hearing cricket noises like...
If we have a company that actually does this, I would love for them to send some. I would love to try a powdered shake version of that. I'd be interested just to try it out. So.
Yeah. You know what's funny, too?
Hit up Doug at... admin@mindpumpmedia.com.
Yeah, send us some insect powder. You know what's interesting about this too? I'm thinking there's a lot of food intolerance issues with different kinds of proteins, in particular dairy proteins.
Mm-hmm.
I wonder if there isn't as many intolerance issues with insect protein. My guess
would be tarantula intolerance. So.
Yeah.
that shit does not sit well.
My guess is not. My guess is no. My guess is we probably have less intolerance issues to insect proteins than we do.
Oh, I would guess the same thing
too.
Yeah,
to other proteins. Because, I mean, humans evolved eating the fuck out of insects.
Yeah.
I mean, it's easy food right there. And there's a lot of cultures that still do it.
Well, not to mention a lot of times when people have issues with like, you know, lactose or you have certain issues with, you know, meat and things like that, how your body, a lot of it has to do with how that animal was raised and where, what it was feeding on and things like that, where insects are, like you said, the minimal what they're consuming.
God, you know, I'm thinking about that. Yeah. I wonder if it would be a great protein source for people with food intolerance issues.
Yeah, I bet it would.
You know what I mean?
I mean, that would be my guess. Sense. I mean, obviously, it's not. We have nothing to prove that. So maybe we have to start with somebody letting us
no
try.
There's no gluten
maybe.
There. Right?
Yeah. Yeah. That's right.
Fit Chris, what are the signs that some foods don't agree with you?
Well, there's the obvious ones.
The shits right afterwards. Yeah. That's normal. That's normally a good red flag.
I throw
right?
up.
Yeah, yeah, you take a shit, throw
it
up.
Hurts.
The body, how long, Sal, you know, does it typically take? I mean, it's pretty instantaneous within the first few hours, I would think, after you.
Those are the obvious symptoms. I was just say the obvious symptoms are the one you notice right away. Bloating, gas, burping, heartburn. Those are immediate signs that the food you're eating is you shouldn't probably be eating, even if it's a healthy food, by the way. You know, I'll give you an example. The nightshade vegetables, if I have a lot of them, especially if they're raw, like if I eat a lot of bell peppers, it'll cause digestive issues with me. Bell peppers are healthy as hell, but that doesn't mean that they're good for me. So that's the thing you want to keep in mind. It doesn't necessarily mean if a food is quote unquote healthy, it doesn't necessarily mean it's good for you. Now, the less common signals, or the less obvious signals, I should say, are the ones that happen later on. And some of these take time. You know, like I can eat gluten-containing foods and I won't have a reaction or an issue right away, typically. Sometimes it takes me, you know, 3-4 days of eating them on a consistent basis. Like if I'm on vacation and it's, you know, 3-4 days of eating a little bit of, you know, bread or whatever every single day, then I'll start to notice things like a little bit more stiffness in my joints. I'll notice that my skin, I might, you know, break out a little bit on my shoulders or my back. Other people may notice other skin issues, other autoimmune flare-ups, other digestive issues, mood changes. It's a tough process to identify all these subtle signals because they're not immediate. And really the only way to identify them is to eliminate common intolerances for a long time, for like a month, and then introduce one at a time and wait a week with it being introduced to see if you notice anything.
Everybody should do that.
I find it, I don't know, I find it pretty obvious, you know, when you're looking for it. I think when you're not looking for signs, when you're consuming food, it could you could easily just not even think about it and you'd be like, oh, that was totally fine. But okay, so for example, this weekend, Katrina and I celebrated our birthdays with our good friends, came into town, and back-to-back days, I had birthday cake. And I totally indulged. And I remember like afterwards, like after I had these two big old pieces, and I remember like constantly like taking these big swallows and burping and feeling like I have a bubble in my stomach. And, you know, once I got beyond that and passed, like, yeah, 2-3 hours later, I didn't really notice any other signs of inflammation or anything like that. But just even the process of it digesting and going down, you could tell my body was just like, it just didn't agree all the way with it. Did I get it down? Absolutely. Did I notice any crazy things that kept me moving for the rest of the day or, you know, made me throw up or no, I didn't do any of that crap. But man, I could totally tell a difference when I was putting something like that in my body versus eating something that was really full, nutrient dense and clean and lean. Like I swear that food, my body, I take it in, breaks it down. I don't feel like it's sitting in my stomach. I'm not burping and farting like crazy right afterwards. I don't feel like I have bubbles in my stomach. I think those signs are pretty immediate right afterwards when you consume foods like this.
You know, bloat is a big one that people ignore. Yeah. I know, especially women. I've had so many female clients that just accept bloat as this is just part of
going through some hormone thing.
No, not even that. Just this is the way it is. Like after 8 meals, I get bloated.
Yeah,
That is not normal.
Yeah,
you know, you identify what's going on. You should not get, you know, the whole pregnant belly feeling after eating a meal. And if you do eat a meal and you identify that certain types of foods do that to you, that's not a good sign. You should avoid eating those foods. So bloat is a big one because people tend to like accept that as like not a big deal. Here's another one, like water weight gain. If you notice after eating certain meals that the next day you gain 2 or 3 pounds of water and it's gone the following day if you don't eat those things, if something's making you retain that much water, it's probably not a good idea either. But like skin is one, hair, nails, mood, sleep. Sleep is another one. You know, how stiff your joints feel. These are all signs,
thought process.
Yeah, these are all signs that you want to pay attention to. One for me, like I said, with the gluten is I'll break out a little bit and like they're a little bit on my shoulders and my back. And it's always whenever I eat bread. And it's after about 2 or 3 days of eating bread on a regular basis. I'm not eating a ton of it. It's just if I have some 2-3 days in a row, sure enough, that's going to happen to me.
Well, I think learning to look at the signs too of when you're eating good foods, like how good you feel is connecting those, you know, because we've talked about this before too. When somebody who eats shitty all the time, they don't realize that they don't feel good because they don't know what it's like to feel really good from eating really good clean foods on a regular basis. And I hate using the term clean, but it's real. You know what I'm saying? Like there's clean good foods for you and there's shittier
nutrient
sources.
Nutrient dense.
Yeah, there's shittier sources of food. And when you're choosing those good sources, I mean, this is a lot of what promoted the special that we're running all month long in November is, you know, we noticed that a lot of people that were getting the bundles and the programs we're skipping out on the nutrition guide and the fasting guide, and it's something that we heavily recommend. So all month long, we said, listen, if anybody picks up any bundle, so if you buy any of our program bundles, you have a choice of any guide absolutely for free. So you can pick the nutrition guide up, which breaks down all these different food categories so you know, like, these are the type of foods that you should be choosing to eat on a regular basis. And there's a huge variety. There's a grocery list in there to give you an idea of, you know, how you should be grocery shopping. There's also a macro counter in there so you can put in all your information as far as your weight and what your goals are, and it'll spit off, you know, where you should be calorie-wise and macronutrient-wise. You know, then you start following a good plan like this of what your body needs and pay attention to this, how you feel. Pay attention to your sleep. Pay attention to all the good signs. And then start connecting that when you go off, because it's inevitable, right? We're all human. We're all going to have a birthday. We're all going to have a rough day. We're all going to have a time where you fall off and you're not eating these ideal foods for you all the time. So pay attention. Pay attention.
Well, also, when you're tracking and going through that process of understanding, it's not that the amount that you've calculated is the final answer, right? That's not the one. Like, you have to evaluate how you feel as far as like when you go through that process, and keep that in mind that to go back, readjust, and you'll find that balance that really works well with your lifestyle and like how you plan out your meals and everything else.
Yeah, yeah. I want people to understand, like, you know, autoimmune symptoms can be very mild. They can be, you know, just a little bit more allergies. That's another one that people don't pay attention to, that their diet can make them more sensitive to environmental allergies, or, you know, someone might be more prone to getting
high. That's a great point. I mean, like my psoriasis, it's a huge difference when I'm off like that, and it flares up worse. Like, I have psoriasis year round, no matter what. And I notice when I'm eating really good and I'm not falling off, like I'm really, my psoriasis stays suppressed. It stays down. The moment I, like, from the cake, I mean, I'm bad right now. I'm all flared up.
See, I would challenge you to staying away from all food. Because here's the thing, especially with a larger autoimmune issue like psoriasis, because that's more of a stronger autoimmune reaction. You've actually been diagnosed now with an autoimmune disease. You know, I'm talking about like the more mild ones. Like I'll get hives after a hot shower. I hear some people saying that, or I sneeze more. Those are mild signs. But the bigger ones, like you're talking about, Adam, I would challenge you to avoid all food. I mean, you have to completely avoid them. You can't even have a smidge of them. Completely avoid them for a long time. For the immune system to reset. Because
that's how I know it's affected, because that's what happened. Was it took, and I've talked about this on the podcast before, it took months of avoiding sugar. One of the biggest things I noticed from the ketogenic diet was, you know, it was very eye opening for me that those foods, even the most subtle amount inside my diet, would keep it from flaring up. You know, so if I at all introduced it, then my psoriasis would stay up. But it took a consistent amount of time of staying away from the sugars and processed foods. Then I noticed it started to suppress. But it takes time. You know, it's not an overnight thing.
And you want to keep in mind, like, autoimmune means your immune system is attacking itself. And that is the biggest, one of the biggest health risks that we're seeing now in modern times. It is, they're incurable by Western medicine standards. And they can progress into horrible things. When you have symptoms of autoimmune issues here and there, that means your immune system is not functioning properly. And your immune system, it's got the key to long life or very short life. So it's something you definitely want to pay attention to, even if the signs are small.
Happy, healthy, and free. How often should you test your PR?
I test my PR. Typically, I might test it at the end of a strength phase that usually lasts about 3 weeks.
3-4 weeks, yeah.
Yeah, so if I'm in, like, right now, I just started MAPS anabolic phase one, which, by the way, I haven't done phase one anabolic in a long time. Oh, I forget how fucking awesome it feels. So I'll probably test my PRs at the end of the third week. But should you test your PRs? I mean, if you want to kind of see, but you don't have to necessarily test them. You can see if you're getting stronger without maxing out.
I went years and years without ever testing my PR. In fact, I didn't really even get into testing my PR that much until actually the three of us all got together, because then it became competitive and trying to chase Sal and the deadlift and Justin with the squat and bench press. Like, so for me, I didn't even really pay attention to that for a very, very long time. And for me, it really came down to this. Like, I'm not competing. You know, I can see progress in my body, the way it looks, the weight that I am moving, how I'm moving the weight. I mean, you can definitely see if you're gaining strength, gaining muscle visibly and through your workouts without ever testing a PR. So it is not necessary to do that whatsoever. In fact, originally, I used to be anti all that, because I felt like there was this whole, and I really feel like CrossFit did a lot of this, because CrossFit is so heavy into maxes and PR and doing that. So I, of course, took the opposite side, which is, I think that's ridiculous, you know, unless you're competing and you need to know, you know, what, and you're in, you know, competing for a.
Well, and you're weightlifting competing.
Yeah, that's exactly. That's what I mean. Like,
you're not just like for a sport.
Yeah, exactly. That's the only time it really, really, really matters, because your placing is dictated based off of your PR.
Well, see, that's what I mean with the PR. Like, you don't have to max out. Like, let me give an example. If I did
Like a projected?
Yeah, like if I did four reps with a squat with, let's say, 275 at a certain intensity, and I maintained that, so I stopped two reps short of failure. Mm-hmm. And next week, I did 285 for four reps, but I kept the same intensity. I still didn't go to failure. I didn't max out, but I got stronger. So I can see that I'm stronger.
Yeah.
So, you know, you don't necessarily need to.
Yeah, and, technically, like, that's a PR.
You can pay attention right, to that's signs a PR. Of progression.
Yeah, that's technically a PR. PR stands for personal record. I guess we should have made that clear in case somebody who's listening doesn't know what PR stands for. It stands for a personal record. Typically, people, though, think of that as a single rep.
Like, and maxing out. Yeah. Like going all out.
Yes. And that's the reason why I think I spoke out against it so much, because it's not necessary for great programming to see great results. You do not have to do a PR.
No.
There's still a place for it. I mean, as far as assessments go, like in my opinion, like with certain sports that will demand a lot of force and, you know, at that particular moment. So it's a nice tool that you can have to see, you know, what effect you had in the weight room and how efficient you are with your lifts as far as the skill is concerned. But making sure that that's like, we didn't do that until the very end of our entire off-season workout program.
Yeah.
Just to be clear.
And that's something that we utilize more than the average person, because a lot of what we do, a lot of times we're testing our programming. Like we design a program and then we say, you know, hey, let's modify this or tweak this and then let's look back at it. So that's part of our job. Part of our job in providing you guys with solid content all the time is to be testing and tweaking and doing those things, so you don't have to. You know,
our job
is to put out a program that if you follow this fucking program, you're going to be hitting PR.
You will keep going forward.
You will be progressing. Yeah. And part of us making sure that is kind of testing that on ourselves and, you know, manipulating different things. And so I would think that, you know, the whole testing your PR is a little bit more important for ourselves to provide something for you guys that you guys can rely on, that's going to continue to progress you through your program. But unless you're a high level athlete, like Justin's saying, or somebody who is competing in a powerlifting, it is absolutely not necessary whatsoever. In fact,
I wouldn't have anybody who's not advanced, you know, constantly testing.
And this is where this is where I'm going with 100%. This is, I 100% think that, you have to weigh the risk versus reward here. And I'm guilty of this. You know, when you start chasing this PR number, especially when you're doing like a single rep max and you're so caught up in trying to move up another 5 or 10 pounds at the risk of possibly being off or having an imbalance or a deviation, and you're trying to push through that, the risk of injury becomes much, much greater.
And then you're set back now. Now you're not progressing anymore, right?
Because now you have to fix this issue that you just heard. And I feel very strongly about this because I've fucking done this to myself multiple times. So I'm speaking like this, because I'm pointing the finger at others and saying like, oh, he's an idiot for doing that or she's dumb for doing that. I'm saying I was an idiot. I've done this enough times to know, and I know better. So I'm trying to express that to you or those that are listening that it is not necessary.
The only times I've ever been hurt is because of this fact alone.
Yeah.
That, like, I'm testing myself and I'm doing it at a time that, you know, really wasn't a time I should have been doing.
No,
that.
What you want to consider is, you could be the most stable, have great form, but what will challenge your imbalances, however minute and small they are, is when you're training to fatigue. And that includes a max. So if I have the smallest muscle imbalance, it doesn't really present itself when I'm doing my normal sets. But now that I'm going max out, balls out, that small imbalance is going to become glaring. And that's what can cause the problems. And that's why PRing in that way, because like I said, you can go for a PR without going to failure. It makes a big difference. But if you go to failure, if you're going for that max, max, max lift, and you have any kind of an imbalance or issue with your movement, it's going to become glaring and your risk of injury becomes much higher. And that doesn't matter whether you do a single rep max or you do, you know, you're hammering things out to failure at 10 reps. When you get to that point with that fatigue, things break down. And especially with the one rep max, it's breaking down and you got a lot of weight on your back now. You know, now you're messing your squats off, but rather than having 200 pounds on your back, you got 300 pounds on your back. Not a good place to be. You know, when you're doing that. And I'll say the two times I've ever hurt myself, or the two ways I've ever hurt myself doing lifting weights, was with my either a max rep, one rep PR, or B, when I'm going for high reps with a light weight and I get fatigued and my form breaks down towards the end of the set. So it's really about going to failure. So, and we typically advise against going to failure.
I'm glad
and it's true for that too.
I'm glad you said that because this is a part of why we speak so much on this. I know that I've seen people recently talking about or referring, like they're talking about us as far as, you know, talking about never going to failure, we're not saying that. There's a place for all of that. But as guys that have been training for so many years and so many people, you realize that, oh my God, like the risk versus reward on doing something like that. Sure, you might get like a smidge of more gains because you pushed that one time to failure versus going two reps short. But we're looking at the big picture, the risk that that person could get set back because they have a slight imbalance. And then now they just aggravated something because they pushed that heavy of a weight when they didn't need to, now sets them back. Whereas if they would have just kept going along and cutting themselves off two reps before failure, they would see a nice good progression that maybe took them a week, a little bit longer to get there because they didn't push their max load.
Plus, think about it this way. Like when you're going to failure, right? Let's say you're going 10 reps standing shoulder press to failure. Up until rep eight, now you're getting fatigued, right? You're two reps short of failure. Let's say 10 reps is failure. The 10th rep is absolute failure. Your form is good. Now think of that last rep. Usually, for the most part, the last rep is the ugliest rep because you're failing, right? What kind of signal, what kind of recruitment pattern are you reinforcing now in your body? You're reinforcing a bad recruitment pattern. So you might have increased the intensity a little bit and maybe get some benefits sometimes, by the way, not all the time, because you go to failure all the time and your results won't be as good. But let's say you throw it in every once in a while and you might squeeze out an extra 2%, you know, benefit. It's still not worth it because that last rep is shitty typically, and that last rep then is going to reinforce a bad recruitment pattern, which then will carry on for the rest of your time you're working out and whatever.
Very few people know how to go to failure correctly.
Yeah.
Very few people.
Thank you. It's a big time skill.
It is a major skill, and it's one that I think that if I still catch myself breaking down, because when you get so focused on getting the weight up and going to failure, the body is just going to get the weight up, and it'll leverage itself any way possible. Mm-hmm. And we know already that leveraging yourself just to get a weight up is not mechanically safe most of the time. So we understand this. This is why we stress that. And it's not to take away from somebody who's got a perfect form, understands how to go to failure, and, you know, intermittently puts that into their routine. That's awesome. Each one of us utilize that and do that too. But we like to speak to the majority.
Yes. Right. Think about the two things you're asking upon your body, right? So number one, remain in perfect form. That's the first thing you're asking your body. But you're also asking it to move this fucking weight and move it now, and this is and use up all your reserves to do it, right? So now you're asking two different things. One is perfect form. The other one is move the fucking weight at all costs. Well, I hate to tell you this, but one of those is gonna win. Mm-hmm. If it's the, you know, go just fucking move the weight at all costs, your form goes down. If it's the, you know, form that takes precedence, then you're not gonna move it at all costs. I'll tell you what, as a trainer, I would see examples of this all the time without even going to failure. I'll have a client do a shoulder press, standing shoulder press. As they start to fatigue, you know what they start to do? They come up on their toes. Mm-hmm. Those of you personal trainers listening know exactly what I'm talking about. Why do you think your client is coming up on their toes at the top of a shoulder press when they start to fatigue? Because their body doesn't understand form. Your body understands movement. All it knows
trying
is
to go higher.
That's it. All it knows is I'm trying to get this dumbbell high, and oh fuck, my elbow won't straighten, so I'm going to come up on my toes. Yep. Your body literally,
this counts,
is telling itself to do things to move that weight in the direction you're looking to move it. So if I'm going to failure on a deadlift or a squat or a bench press or a row or whatever,
It's a great point that you made, though, because it's, what are you teaching your body? You know, are you teaching your body that whenever you're under this kind of like extra demand of load and stress, are you going to go revert to old ways that, you know, or like these other systems that will just get you through that movement? Or are you like mastering the process of like how to move the weight and then seeing the limitation of that as far as, okay, if my form breaks, it doesn't count.
Exactly. Listen, those programs that Adam talked about earlier, the bundles where we're giving away the nutrition guide and the fasting guide, you can find those at mindpumpmedia.com. This entire month, you can pick any guide with the enrollment of any bundle. Also, don't forget to leave us a 5-star rating and review on iTunes. If we like your review and we pick it, you'll get a free Mind Pump t-shirt. Also, check us out on Instagram at Mind Pump Radio. You can find me at Mind Pump Sal. Adam is at Mind Pump Adam. And Justin's at Mind Pump Justin.
Thank you for listening to Mind Pump. If your goal is to build and shape your body, dramatically improve your health and energy, and maximize your overall performance, check out our discounted RGB Super Bundle at mindpumpmedia.com. The RGB Super Bundle includes MAPS Anabolic, MAPS Performance, and MAPS Aesthetic, 9 months of phased expert exercise programming designed by Sal, Adam, and Justin to systematically transform the way your body looks, feels, and performs. With detailed workout blueprints and over 200 videos, the RGB Super Bundle is like having Sal, Adam, and Justin as your own personal trainers, but at a fraction of the price. The RGB Super Bundle has a full 30-day money-back guarantee, and you can get it now, plus other valuable free resources at mindpumpmedia.com. If you enjoy this show, please share the love by leaving us a 5-star rating and review on iTunes and by introducing Mind Pump to your friends and family. We thank you for your support, and until next time, this is Mind Pump.
Whether you're looking to build a website for your business, your hobby, your podcast, or just for fun, Pear Networks is your go-to web hosting partner. Not only do we have the lowest domain price in the industry, starting at just $11, we've got hundreds of stunning website templates to help you stand out from the crowd. You're not a techie? Not a problem. With our easy DIY site builders, you can launch your impressive website without any technical know-how. And when it comes to security and updates, don't worry, we've got you covered. Our 24/7 US-based customer support is the best in the industry. Check out pear.com today to learn more. PAIR.com